You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled, and marginalized creatives and their art. You can now support the show by becoming a patron on Patreon. For as little as £1 a month, you can get early access to shows, exclusive content, and a shout out to say thank you. To find out more, visit patreon.com/AGParker. And now, on with the show. Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities. My guest today is award-winning disability awareness consultant and podcast host, Andrew Gerza. Andrew, how are you?
Hello, I'm so happy to be here on your show. Hello, thank you for having me.
I'm absolutely honored that you're here.
Oh, I'm excited. We've been talking about this forever, so I'm glad it's finally happening.
It's so good. I feel like I've kind of like bent the rules because this is meant to be for like artists, but at the end of the day, your podcast and social media posts absolutely count as
well,
art.
I've done artsy things. I think I can qualify as an artist. I've done theater. I've done spoken word. I've done porn. Those are all art forms, aren't they?
They are absolutely all very valid art forms. And you've been doing a bit of acting recently as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't say what yet because the world is making me be hush hush. But I have done cool things. Yes, I have.
Oh my god!
At the time of this recording, I'm not allowed to say what it is for. But yes, I've done cool things.
Like, I'm so excited for all of that to actually come out into the open and for us to be able to see
me,
you.
The fuck too. I can't say I can't say anything what it's for, but I'm really excited.
Amazing. Oh my god, amazing. Your career has just like on every single format that you're kind of putting stuff out on, because you've been featured on the BBC, CBC, Daily Extra, Gay Times UK, like all of these different platforms, and then you've got your podcast and you have a sex toy company. You're doing so many different things and they're all just really flourishing right now. How does it feel?
It's exhausting. It's a lot of work. And when I started this kind of as a freelancer, I never expected myself to be this busy. And being disabled and being this busy is great. And I love it. I'm so thankful and grateful to have gotten where I've gotten, telling my story about disability and being like a micro niche celebrity that I am. And that's what I call myself, because I'm in no way a celebrity, but people, like, whenever I talk to people, they're like, oh, wow, it's you. And I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah, of course it is. Where you, what? But, like, I'm so proud that I, telling my story and being so open about my experiences of being queer, crippled, and disabled, resonates so much.
Yeah. So I just realized, actually, that, like, some people listening to this might not know who Andrew Gerza is.
Oh, wow.
I just had that thought, and I was like, because, you know, it's like if someone says, like, who is so-and-so, I think to the disability community, everybody knows who Andrew Gerza is. But for those who aren't avid Andrew Gerza fans already, Andrew, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, my initials also start with AG. my name is Andrew Gerza. I'm a disability awareness consultant and content creator. I've been working in this space kind of as a freelancer now for basically 10 years, which feels really weird to say, but been working in this space for 10 years. I'm a podcast host. I host an award-winning podcast on disability called Disability After Dark. I run a podcast network, Cripple and Co., which is the network that George's stuff is on.
Whoop, whoop. Hell yeah.
And I do a whole bunch of stuff on Twitter and Instagram, kind of just sharing my daily experiences and my feelings around being disabled. And I just try to bring disability out of the shadows and into the light. That's sort of what I do. And I try to share my experiences as honestly as I can.
And it's fantastic. I know for a lot of people that have listened to your show, myself included, and it's just had such a transformative effect on us, because, you know, you post about things and you talk about things like on your social media as well, about what it's like to be a queer disabled person. And it, as you say, it is quite a niche topic to explore, but there are quite a lot of us in that same boat that really need to see our struggle kind of spoken about in a very public place.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something that I am learning to navigate. I love social media for what I can do, but I also hate social media for a variety of reasons. Yeah. I find sometimes the disability community on those platforms can be really hard to talk to, because I think when you talk about disability on social media and in public, we're only supposed to talk about it in one of two ways. As disabled folks, we're supposed to talk about how hard it is, or we're supposed to talk about how bad able-bodied people are. And I don't fit in any of those boxes. And I don't agree with most of that. And most of what I see on social media from other disabled folks is very angry. And I just can't, for my own mental health, I can't do that. I can't live in that space. So I find it, I love posting stuff, but I post my thoughts and then I run away.
You just don't engage with anyone that might reply. I like that.
I really don't. I really try not to, because it's really hard to, it's just, I don't find it fulfilling to have fights over semantics or fights over like the nuance of disability. And it's like, why are we fighting about this? Like, why? One of the things I find the hardest in dealing with the disability community on social media platforms is when I say something about my experience and then somebody goes, I'm disabled and I don't need that, and so why are you? And it's like, well, hold on a minute. The disability experience is not the same for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, why are you screaming at me? That, like, I've been talking a lot about mask mandates right now, because as we're recording, it's like we're in the middle of the pandemic. So I'm talking about how I think lifting mask mandates is super dangerous. And I'll have a lot of people coming into my platforms being like, well, I'm disabled and I can't wear a mask. Doesn't that mean that I should stay inside forever? And I'm like, no, but I wasn't even talking to you.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? So I find my engagement on social media as a disabled person to be, I put in my ideas, I put in my thoughts, and I run the fuck away.
Transmit only. And yeah, you can leave the other stuff there, but you know, you're not going to have to go and sift through it. I think that's quite wise. Is it a case of you're getting more of this kind of negative feedback from people within the disability community rather than non-disabled people?
Yeah, I find, if I'm really honest, I find non-disabled people a lot easier to talk to and a lot easier to like share my experiences with, because even if they say something ignorant or ableist, or they're, you know, they want to learn and they want to understand. Yeah. And if I, my honest belief is that if I shut them down by being like, fuck you, you're an ableist, like, that doesn't help anything. Yeah. That doesn't move the needle forward. So as tiring as dealing with ableism can be, and I'm not saying it isn't fucking hard to deal with that, I'm saying that for me, talking to non-disabled people who want to learn and who, even though they make mistakes, has at times been a lot easier than trying to talk to disabled people who are, I think, sitting in a lot of pain and anger that they haven't processed through yet, which is totally fair and totally valid. But I just think we're not going to move our human rights stuff forward if we keep yelling at each other about silly stuff like whether you call yourself differently abled or like handicapped. Like, I get that these things are important, but I also, we have bigger stuff to worry about.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this is quite personal. It's down to the individual, isn't it? And disability isn't a monolith. And for anyone to hold you up and say you are speaking for the whole community, that's on them thinking like, that. That's nothing to do.
Oh, no, I'm not. And I never will. I'll never say that. I always say whenever I start this whole diatribe about how I'm feeling, I always say I'm speaking for me and no one else, because I can't do that.
Yeah.
But I really think that the disabled community, I love them and they're important and I'm proud to be a part of it, but I'm also fucking exhausted to be a part of it, because it's like, friends, we have so much more we could worry about. Like, why are we going into people's Instagrams and fighting over the fact that they use differently abled? Like, come on, we have bigger stuff to worry about. than that.
Yeah. I mean, if someone called me differently abled, I would be peeved, but it's down to them if they want to do that. Do you find, like, as disabled artists or content creators, we're held more to account by the disability community than non-disabled creators?
Oh yeah, 1,000,000%.
What is with that?
I had the pleasure of speaking with Judy Heumann a few months ago.
Oh my God.
I was just as shocked as you are when she agreed to do it. I just about fell over because I reached out to her on Instagram and I said, like, I watch Crip Camp. I know who you are.
Obviously, yes.
Like, you're really famous. Can I talk to you for like however long you want? And they came back with, yeah, we can give you 40 minutes. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. Like, cool.
Wow.
So we got on the thing and we did our interview, and the whole interview, if you go back to, and listen to Disability After Dark episode 216, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I just sit with her and I don't say a word for like 40 minutes because it's Judy Heumann. And I want like, I'm not going to say a word because you're like, you're Judy Heumann.
Yeah.
I'm going to shut the fuck up and let you speak. And so we put it out, and on my podcast, unfortunately, I don't have the time or energy or money to devote to transcripts. I would love to, but I just don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I don't have a team, and it's me, myself, and I running the show. Mm. I just don't have the energy. So I don't put them out, which I know is an accessibility issue, and I know. But so I didn't put them out for this. And the next day I got a tweet that was like, how dare Andrew Gerza not put out transcriptions on Judy Heumann's episode? How dare he? Like, how ableist is that? And I just shook my head and I went, oh, like, okay. Like, so then Judy Heumann's people reached back out to me and were like, can we do transcripts for this? And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah.
Like, sure, of course you can. But that doesn't mean the next week when you're off, I'm going to do transcripts for the next one because I can't. So I just find it really upsetting that our community fails to look at our energy levels, fails to look at our ability levels when we can't provide 100% access.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that it really affects a lot of us. I mean, it's separate to cancel culture, but it also feels quite similar in that there is that threat of you're going to be held to account, but to the extreme where everything has to be absolutely perfect. And we're disabled. Like, my energy levels and my fingers and my wrists won't allow me to spend a lot of time on my computer. And I have the same thing as you. I tried to explain, like, actually transcripts just aren't viable for me right now. I've looked into it. I can't afford it. To do any extra typing is already too much. And like, the aggressive responses from people in the community is really quite shocking.
Like, yeah, they're not polite about it either. They're very quickly to be like, well, then you're not accessible. I'm like, but I'm really trying. And like, if you want to volunteer your time to help me, sure. Like, if I had a team at one point during my podcast, probably about 3 years ago, I had a team of individuals who were all disabled and they wanted to help. They wanted to volunteer their time to do transcripts. But very quickly, after like week two, they were all like, oh no, we're having disability issues.
Yeah.
We can only get part of it done and we can't do this. And so I just said, oh, fucking scrap it then. Like, we'll just let go of transcripts for now because it's really hard. And then the programs that you can look into, like Otter AI or Rev, you know, whatever the other ones are, they're great, but they cost so much money to get them. And then when they do auto transcriptions, they never do what you want them to entirely. So you have to spend hours editing. And if I did that, I'd never put out a show.
Exactly. And your show is so vital, not just to disabled people like me to get to see themselves represented, but also to the non-disabled, because I think a lot of people aren't going to go and do inclusivity or diversity training. They're just not going to. So a lot of education happens on platforms like social media and podcasts. And so for them to have that resource to actually get an insight into what it's like to be a disabled person, I think is fantastic.
Yeah, and no, I'm really proud of the podcast, even though there are days where I'm like, fuck, I don't want to do it today. And lately with my IBS and my chronic illness and all the stuff that I'm dealing with, like, I have an auto calendar booking program where you can book in time like by yourself. Mm. And I'm constantly having to go in and be like, sorry, I know we were supposed to record today or that day, but my body just says no, like, can't do it. Sorry. And so that feels really hard because I'm like, we were joking a minute ago about how, like, you're not a professional, but I often don't feel like a professional because I have to cancel so much, or I have to move things around, or I have to just say I can't do this now. And, like, that's been really hard for me to come to terms with because I love what I do. I love my job. I love that I created a job for myself when nobody would hire me. And I feel angry when I can't meet this capitalist standard of what we're supposed to do as quote unquote professionals.
Yeah.
And that for me has been really hard.
But so I think people like you are beginning to rewrite the definition of what it means to be a professional or what it means to be, you know, a successful this or that, because it shouldn't just be we can perform 100% of the time. We're not machines, you know? And I think when people like you do open up and say, hey, my body is not doing what I want it to do, I can't actually do the thing that needs doing today, I think, yeah, it's beginning to open up that possibility of flexibility and of reshaping what a career can look like.
Yeah, I wish we would have more of those conversations in, like, the everyday world, because, you know, it just is not something that's happening enough, and it's really hard to reshape it when even your own community is like, why'd you cancel so much? Like, I've had people who have canceled two or three times on people, and they'll email me after the third time and be like, why do you keep canceling? And it's like, because I'm trying to be okay, and, like, I'm not okay. And so I'm
trying to stay alive with some quality of life. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's really hard. But I mean, surprisingly, within all that, I'm still, over the past 6 years of the podcast, I've been able to release almost an episode a week,
which is incredible. Like, I do one a month and I'm exhausted, so doing one a week, I'm so blown away. And to have such incredible guests as well, like Judy, and then, like, George Robinson, who plays Isaac in Sex Education.
I was fucking floored when that happened. Can we talk about how floored I was? Okay, so I just jokingly put a call out on my Instagram and was like, do you think we can get George Robinson on the show? And I didn't expect anything of that to happen. Didn't expect it at all. And 2 minutes later, Lucy Dawson, who had been a guest on my show.
Oh, yes.
Was like, I know him. Do you want me to try to set up a thing? And I was like, sure, give it a shot. Like, all right. And so she reached out. And, like, within 24 hours, he was like, so I hear you want me on your show. What's it all about? And I was like, oh my goodness. And then, you know, emails back and forth between him and his publicist. And, like, then we chat. I couldn't even believe it was happening. I was like, I just watched you on the show like 2 hours ago. What's going on?
I mean, that's wild. Like, that's, and surely that's an indicator of your success. So you have these things that you can look back on that are, you know, like, pretty tangible moments of success. So when you do feel flat or low, surely you can kind of draw on those moments.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I try to look at success more like when I get emails from people who are like, I listen to your show and it makes me be a better parent for my disabled kid, or I listen to your show and it makes me, like, understand my ableism better. That to me is more successful than any kind of award, because the awards are nice and that recognition is nice, and, like, getting celebrities like Judy and George on my show are nice, but, like, hearing from the everyday people who listen and knowing that something that I make in my bedroom, like, where I'm recording right now, the audience can't see, but it's my bedroom.
Yeah,
it's basically my living room in my little one bedroom apartment. Doing that from my house with no team and no support and literally a mic and an amp that I plug into my MacBook, and then I just go, like, knowing that kind of production value has reached all these people that give a shit about it. That's really cool.
It's massively cool. Ken, I wanted to ask you a bit about your journey to getting to where you are now. So take us back to before Disability After Dark had become a thing. What was the process? What happened? What triggered you bringing the podcast about?
The podcast. Well, let me go way back. I'll go way back to the beginning. I finished school in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I finished my master's of legal studies from Carleton U in Ottawa, Canada, in 2012. And I had wanted to talk about queerness and disability for a long time, But everybody told me that's not a job, that's a hobby. We want my mom, especially my family at the time, was like, we want you to find a job that is that's gonna be sustaining for you, because being disabled is expensive and we want you to be okay. So yeah, they kept pushing me to do like a Government of Canada job, and I was like, well, fuck that, I don't want to do that. So then I got home from school and I moved back close to home and I started looking for a job, and I called up, like, I don't know what they have in the UK, if they have like employment supports for disabled folks. So I called up the people that are supposed to help me find a job, and they were like, I said, I want to do speaking. I want to do public speaking around disability and queerness. And they were like, oh, that's not a job, that's a hobby. And then, you know, everybody discouraged me to do that. And I was like, well, let me just try. So I went on Vistaprint, made a card with my name on it. I stole the title of disability awareness consultant from somebody.
Oh my God, I love it.
I saw it online somewhere and I was like, I like that, let me steal it. So I stole it from somebody and I put it on a card and I put, this is what I do. And I put my tagline was making disability accessible to everyone.
Nice.
And I put it out and I printed these cards, I had them sent to me, and I started handing them out to everyone that I knew, being like, here's what I do, hire me, please. And then, you know, I got a couple of little gigs here and there for like $100-$200. And then I went to HuffPo and said, I have a story about queerness, can I write for you? And at this point, they weren't paying their writers, they were just getting a story for free. But I was like, I need to put my foot in the door, so I'll just try. So I wrote a bunch of stuff for them about how I want to get fucked, how I want to get, like, how I want to have an orgy, how I want to have all these things with these guys, because at the time they were writing really like sexy stuff. They've changed since, but at the time they were writing really sexy like articles. So I was writing very provocative pieces about sex and disability, being like, I deserve to be fucked like everyone else. Like, here's why we need disabled porn stars, that kind of stuff. And then as I started typing a lot, because I was doing a lot of like articles for them, I was like, typing is really hard for me. It hurts my hands. So what if I just looked into podcasting? And I looked around and I noticed there were no disability centered podcasts that only focus on sex. So I was like, what if I took some of the articles that I wrote for HuffPo and turned them into like a 30-minute think piece about just as a podcast, just to see if I could do it. And at this point, I had no mic. I had no amp. I had my Apple headphones plugged into my MacBook and I just started recording. And it was so bad. If you listen, back to like the first couple episodes of Disability After Dark, the audio is abysmal, horrible. But that's how I started. I just was like, I want to be able to say this stuff without typing it so much. And that's how my foray into podcasting started.
That is an amazing story. And like, I'm very careful about using the word inspiring about other disabled people, because I shudder when people use it about me.
Oh, you can use it here. It's okay. Go ahead.
But it's so inspiring. It's so inspiring, because you literally, like, you created a job for yourself and you did it in such a bold way. Talking about sex and disability, that is a brave subject to explore. And I say that not because like, oh, disabled people shouldn't have sex and we shouldn't talk about sex. But I say that because a lot of people think that about us, that we shouldn't be able to discuss things, that we shouldn't say, quite rightly, we want to get fucked, we deserve to get fucked, and we want to have, you know, like orgies or kinky sex.
Yeah.
exactly. And it's changed life for so many people, and people that I talk to as well, who are like, oh, I didn't know that I was allowed to ask for that, or I didn't know that I was allowed to say to my partner, hey, can we make sex more accessible for me, for instance? So it's wonderful work that you do.
Oh, well, thank you. It's always nice to hear from a fellow disabled creator that the stuff I do is valuable, because, you know, like I said, I do it in my bedroom. Oftentimes I do a lot of what I do alone, and I never know if it's reaching people. So I'm really glad that it's resonating for you.
Absolutely. And then seeing you on social media as well. And I mean, come on, how many people follow you? It's amazing. And how many awards have you won now?
I mean, let me think. Awards, I have them all on my wall here. One, I got a Canadian Podcast Award in 2021. I got a 2020 Webby Honoree Award, which was cool. I mean, I sort of paid for that one, but it was so cool.
A Queerty Award.
Didn't win that one, but was nominated and got to go to like LA and be with cool LA people for a minute.
God, amazing.
And I mean, that was really cool. And like, again, really nice, but it's, for me, it's just doing the work and keeping my head down. And if you can believe it, like the Andrew Gerza persona you see everywhere is very like brazen and bold and yeah, and in your face. But me as a real person, I'm fucking shy, man. I'm really shy. Like, I don't, it's weird to be, you know, I remember when I was in LA and seeing all those Hollywood people, and there were some famous Hollywood gays there. And it was like, ooh. I was so shy. I was like, I'm going to be in the corner, just not looking at you. Like, and I had the, again, I can't say for what, but I had the pleasure of meeting a really famous disabled celebrity, and I can't say who it is either.
Oh my God. I had the
pleasure of meeting them recently. And when you find out who it is, you'll be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. When I met them, I was like, so starstruck. And they're like, hey man, how are you? And I was like, oh God, you.
It's amazing. Andrew, you're such a tease. Like, I'm dying here. I really want to know all these secrets.
I'll tell you off the air. Don't worry.
Fuck yeah. Sorry, listeners, but fuck yeah. So, like, continuing on the topic of sex and disability, but you've got a play called Access Me.
Yeah, my friends and I in Toronto. This is not my idea. I just got asked on board about 7 years ago to be a part of this. My friend Ken Harrower, who is a disabled actor in Canada, and my friend Jonathan Sinan, who's a disabled director in, or no, sorry, a non-disabled director in Canada. He's directed really great plays. Like, there's a play in Canada called Black Boys, all about queerness and blackness. Really, really amazing, like, producer and director. They asked me to come on to do a play about sex and disability, like, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. I never done a play before. And so we have spent the last, you know, minus the pandemic, the last like 7 years, every summer meeting and putting a play together all about sex and disability. And it stars myself, Ken Harrower, and Frank Hull. And Frank Hull is a wheelchair dancer, a really cool artist. Ken Harrower is a disabled actor, and I'm just me, but like, so each of us tell different stories of trying to access queerness and sexuality and disability. And at one point in the play, I get lifted up in a sling to be pretend that I'm going to go fuck a dude.
Yeah.
And it was so cool to have that on stage and talk about like what it's like to actually have sex and disability. To put that in a play in our artistic format is so fun.
That's amazing. And like, that's going to really open some people's eyes. Cause I think oftentimes we get asked the question, well, how do you fuck? Which, I mean, obviously that's a really rude question, but to offer that to an audience and to be like, oh, okay, if you're curious, actually, this is how it happens for some people.
Yeah. Yeah. Like and what I love about the play is at the end of the play, the whole club that we're in, at least the last time we did it, the whole club that we're in turns into a nightclub. So the minute the play is done, everybody there gets to dance.
Nice.
And be with us in like a queer sex club that is accessible. But I love sharing those stories because we don't see that kind of stuff on stage. We don't see that kind of stuff represented every day. Like, we barely see disabled people on stage in theater. So doing something like this is so cool and so different. I'm in no way an actor. I'm really like, even though I've done some stuff and I've done theater, I'm not good at it. I'm basically myself. Like, I can't be a character. Like, I'm not good at it.
I'm sure you're very compelling though, because that's just, I mean, you're just like a really gorgeous, wonderful person, and I just want to keep like looking at you. So
when you see me on that thing that I can't say what it is, you'll see.
Oh, fuck's sake.
You'll see just how not good of an actor I am. But, you know, doing that play, it was so powerful because we got to just tell our stories and be ourselves and kind of shock an audience. There's a game we play during the play, a game called, like, you know, Andrew's Day doing attendant care. And everybody's in a circle on the stage. Like, there's audience members there. So it's in the round. And so, like, I go around and I talk about my day and I say, I'm going to share with you what it's like to get up in the morning. And I say, then the attendant comes in and they say, good morning, Andrew. And then I pick somebody in the audience and I say, you pretend you're my attendant. Say good morning to me like you would if you were my attendant. And they say, good morning, Charlie. And then I say, great. Now pretend you're my lover and we just fucked, or we're going to have sex, or we're going to be intimate. How would you say good morning to me now? And I make them like redo it and show them the difference between like what it's like to have a dentist care and yeah. not have that intimacy. And like yeah. that kind of stuff is really fun. So to put my life in a play is really, really, it was really challenging. And there were days where we were all like, fuck this stuff. We don't want to do it anymore, but it's so important.
Yeah. And did you ever feel like it was making you feel like too vulnerable, like it was too everything laid?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were days where all three of us, the principal actors in the thing, we had a day where we just fought with each other. We were like, we were all mad and upset because they were asking us to really, some of the stories that we tell in this play are really personal and really hard. And so when you do that day in, day out, and even though it's an art piece and even though it's totally safe and respectful, like we had to bring in a mental health professional for each of us to like debrief afterwards because it was so much heavy shit. Yeah. But I love putting that on stage though. I'm so proud of that.
When is it out? When can people come and see? Can I fly to Canada to come and watch it?
I would love for you to fly to Canada. I have no idea when it's happening again because the pandemic really, like, we had plans to do it in Toronto in 2023. We still do. We might meet this summer to just like revisit the play.
Yeah.
Like, but we haven't been in the same room since summer of 2019.
Wow. Okay. So a few years then.
So like we had to put it on hold because the pandemic just fucked everybody right over. So I would love to say we'll do something properly in 2023, but I don't know. I can't say.
That's the thing. It's become very unpredictable for a lot of disabled people to be able to say, yes, I'm going to go and do these gigs or do this tour or perform here. Or I don't know, for you, maybe even giving awareness talks and things. How has it changed the way you work?
I don't do anything in person anymore.
Yep.
Like I still charge the same. I still charge what I charge because my time is valuable and I'm worth it.
Yeah.
But I will not fly anywhere anymore. Like the only reason that I got in a plane in the last few months was because they were like, it's for TV. We need you here. And I was like, that's really cool. I'll be there. But I certainly, if it's for an awareness talk that I do, like I'm not going there in person unless you're paying me like way more.
Yeah.
And you're covering all my accommodations.
And also part of the disability awareness is going to be have the awareness that during a pandemic, disabled people who are high risk don't want to travel anywhere or be in person.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't want to do it in person. I want to hop on a Zoom, do my hour, get a check, say thank you very much, and then we'll be done.
Absolutely. And I think that lack of, for a lot of us in the community, we haven't had that face-to-face contact with a lot of people. So things like social media, things like online events, which various people run, are so important. And then things like podcasts as well, to make us feel connected, to make us feel kind of seen and heard. And as well to kind of combat the internal ableism, which I think seems to take hold, especially during today's climate. Yeah. How have you found that during the pandemic with society and governments kind of saying like, oh, well, you know, as you were saying, mask mandates, they can be ended, and vaccinations, well, it's not compulsory. How has that affected your internalized ableism?
I just am so angry at people who don't want to take it seriously. And what people are forgetting is that this worldwide crisis we're in, and it's a fucking crisis that we're in, it's going to mean that so many more of us are going to become disabled, and so many more of us are going to become chronically ill, and so many more of us are going to become immunocompromised.
Yeah.
Why are we not putting social nets in place so that everyone's okay? And it's heartbreaking to me that we're not taking it seriously.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, certainly from what I've seen, a lot of the people that are trying to raise awareness of the risk factors of getting like long COVID, post-viral illnesses, most of those voices are from within the disabled community. And I feel like they are automatically not listened to because they're part of the community.
Yeah, I do think, though, that it might be in part some of the ways that the, we were talking earlier about the anger within the community.
Yeah,
I think that some of the ways that that translates into like the public sphere is not very inviting.
You mean really aggressively attacking people?
Yeah. And so, like, I'm not saying the anger isn't warranted. Of course it is. I'm angry too. But I feel like sometimes the way that we disabled people produce content, particularly on TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, like, if you call a non-disabled person an abled, are they going to be happy with that? No, probably not. Like, we have to remember that just because we've been oppressed and just because we've been through shit, and I'm not saying that shit is not valid or valuable to talk about. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that the random person you're dealing with probably doesn't know what the fuck ableism is.
Yeah.
And probably doesn't mean it in the way you think they do. So instead of blasting them online right away, and I'm guilty of this too, instead of blasting them online right away, have you tried having a conversation? Have you tried? Have you given it a shot? And for the most part, I would say no, because I see hashtags online that are like, if you hate disabled people, you do this, or like, you hate disabled people if, or like, ables are weird, like that kind of that kind of stuff. And I just go like, I know what you're trying to do, but do you realize what you're actually doing is dividing us when you should be unifying us?
Exactly. We want to build a bridge. And sometimes that means that we maybe have to approach things in a slightly different way. That it's not that it's not an authentic way, because I think we do have that that willingness to connect and show vulnerability and to kind of get them to join our conversation. We have that. We've also got the anger. And I think, unfortunately, the anger is often the first thing that gets communicated.
Oh, yeah. And I think the anger, again, is very valid. I just think that it's just not worth it sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't help. In terms of having a conversation, though, I've spoken about this with a few people recently. And it's like, yeah, okay, if you have the time and the energy to have a conversation with someone and explain why their views or what they're saying fundamentally attacks who you are as a person or threatens your life, for instance, in the extreme, then great. But sometimes we don't have the resources to be able to do that. Sometimes we just kind of have to like walk away.
Well, then I would say walk away. Don't scream about it on a social media platform that is going to give you more chance to be attacked than actually make your point. I think that disabled people on social media, you have a lot of work to do.
I think we all do, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not you. I feel like you're pretty.
Oh no, I do too. There are things that I've said that I've definitely been called out for. I remember one time I was, but to give you an example of how the anger is so silly, I remember one time I wrote that I want to build a bridge between non-disabled people and disabled people, and I won't use the word abled to describe a non-disabled person anymore because I feel like it's really divisive. And somebody goes, when did you change your tune on this? When I followed you, you were all about this. Why did you change? You're gaslighting me. And I was like,
what
do you think? Excuse me? And they were like, I'm disabled and I feel gaslighted upon. And I was like, okay, I'm allowed to change my view.
Yeah.
What are you even talking about? And they're like, I'm not going to follow you anymore if you do this. And it's like, go ahead, the door, go ahead. Feel free to unfollow. Do whatever you got to do. It's all right. Like, I'm not upset with you. What's going on?
I feel like it's such a balancing act that people have to do. And I think the intersection of queerness and disability is a really interesting one, and I'd love to chat with you about that in a second. But like,
oh yeah,
standing on, you know, kind of like straddling those two groups of people and then having a platform where like you have a lot of followers, right? You are fairly prominent. You're definitely prominent within the community. And so I feel like you're held to account a lot more than others. And so balancing, trying not to accept the queers, the straights, the disabled, the non-disabled it's hard.
It's such a balancing act. And if you make a mistake, or if you are like, you know, I'm just trying to think if I want to share the story or not. Probably not. But but, you know, if you make a mistake or you say something like that may be a little bit out in left field or not exactly what the prominent narrative is.
Yeah.
You're tarred and feathered without. You're proven guilty before anybody looks at what happened.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I hate about the internet. If something happens and somebody, I don't know, makes an accusation about something, you are held to a standard that nobody can meet.
Yeah. You have to be perfect.
And it makes me so angry, which is why now I make my comments on social media, I make my tweets, and I run the fuck away.
I feel like you're pretty good at really emphasizing the point of I'm an individual. These are my views only. And also, by the way, if we attack people, they're not going to be willing to have a conversation and try to understand us. And...
But I can't even say that. If I put that tweet out, people would freak out. People would have a coronary. I can't even say we have to come together. Well, why? The A-words are the worst. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. I just was trying to help. Oh, no, sorry.
I'm 100% guilty of having used the word abled in a poem I wrote called Straight White Support Male. And my poetry mentor at the time very kindly was like, I don't really like the use of abled in this part. Could you maybe change it to something less offensive? And I was like,
yeah,
oh.
Right.
And
I just think that if we want to move the needle forward in disability rights, we need to include able-bodied people. We need to.
Yeah,
we need to, and we need to do it in a way that meets them where they're at, because most of them don't know what ableism is. They've never heard that word before. They don't know what it is. They have no idea how to use it. And our social justice language, in my view, is really toxic. It's really clicky. If you say you do social justice and you don't know every single thing that's happening in the social justice sphere, then you've done it wrong.
And the fact is that there's such a rich and diverse history of all these various different social justice issues. No one is going to be able to remember all of them.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel like we need to give people a bit more slack. And I think you're right. Oftentimes when you listen to social justice warriors or activists speak, it can just feel like you're being attacked. Even as a disabled queer person who experiences prejudice, you're kind of sitting there going, oh no, I did some of those things too, so I must be a terrible person. And then it kind of makes you want to give up.
Oh, like I've done them 100%. Like when I started social media, I was all about the, oh my God, you're able-bodied, you're the worst. And then what started happening was I felt sick. I didn't like it. It wasn't fulfilling me. And finally, I was like, you know what? I want to make people feel okay not learning. I want to make people feel okay not understanding, and give them tips and tricks to navigate being with a disabled person or being friends with a disabled person. Or, you know, I want to use my platform to do that. And the minute I did that, people got so mad. They were like, what? You're not simply parroting what we already know? How dare you?
Stick to the company line, Andrew.
yeah, exactly.
I think it's so important to encourage people to be willing to make mistakes. It's like with, so you're also non-binary.
Yes. I'm a they, he.
Yes, you are. And I'm a they, them. And I don't know if you found this, but with people in your life when you came out and said, hey, can you start to, you know, incorporate the pronoun they, for instance. I think I really had to emphasize it's okay to make mistakes. I just want you to try. And I feel like we need to have that same approach with non-disabled people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like what was my non-binariness just can't, it was something that I wanted to play with for a little bit. So I just thought, let me just try it. Let me see how it feels. Some days it still doesn't feel great. That's why I use they and he interchangeably. And when I'm in certain environments, like when I'm in my family home and they say he, I don't get upset, because I'm like, first of all, that is a pronoun that I use. Secondly, I don't want to have a whole conversation with my mom about why I am trying this out. It's too, not that she'd be fine with it, but it's I don't want to like have to have that whole conversation. So I don't worry about it. You're not hurting me. And yeah. I think the same with disability language. My family, my mom, when she was raising me and growing up with me, she, in the 80s, the way they described disabled people was special needs.
Yeah. So
she will call me her special needs son. And for a while, I was like, Mom, you can't say that. And she was like, am I hurting you? Is it painful for you? And I'd be like, no. And so she'd be like, why are you screaming at me then? So like, I try to listen to when people use language like differently able or handy capable. And yes, those words make me cringe. They do. But I try to listen to what is the inflection in their voice? Are they trying to attack me? What is their intention here? Are they just trying to learn? Are they trying to be respectful? Yes. Then I'm going to shut up because what is the point of having a fight right now?
So I half agree with you. And I would say it's great that for you, it doesn't cause you harm if, you know, someone just uses he, him pronouns, for instance, or if someone calls you handy capable, though. I think I would just crack up because it just sounds like a really funny. Anyway.
Oh, no, it makes me, I don't love it, but I don't love it. No.
But I think there are people, myself included, actually, that if someone gets my pronouns wrong or if someone called me special needs as well, that's, as you say, if the intention is good, that's one thing. If you then say, oh, actually, you know, I prefer they, them pronouns, or actually I prefer disabled, and then they get aggressive and then they get defensive, I think that's different. So it's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm right on board with you there. If I've asked you to and I've explained why, and you continue to do what I've asked you not to do, that's completely different.
Yeah.
But if I meet somebody like in the first go around and they say, oh, this is Andrew, he, or they'll say stuff like, or, oh, Andrew is, I don't see your disability, Andrew. I see a person. Okay. Like I let them go the first time. And then after, like, if I've said like, you know, if I've explained, no, please see my disability, and they keep going, yeah, then it's a problem for sure. With it, like, I think there are, and that's why I think there are degrees of ableism. There's ableism where I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And then there's ableism where I've specifically asked you to do a thing and you didn't do that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's very important to recognize that and then choose your battles wisely, and also try not to see them as battles, maybe.
Yeah, don't see them as a fucking fight. Like,
yeah.
Like, most of the time it's with friends, or it's with like people that you care about, or people that you want to fuck, or people that you like, you know, why turn it into? And then if it is something that really hurt you, maybe the first thing you do is not go on the Twitter and blast that person. Like, yeah, maybe get a journal where you can blast them in private and don't put it in a public forum.
Exactly. And if you can, have a one-to-one conversation with them if you think it's safe and productive.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, like, I want to ask you stupid questions. Like, what is your, absolute worst, like, disabled euphemism that you've heard, but I'm afraid of the answer?
Well, not a euphemism, but I did do a talk for this big Canadian, psychology company a couple years ago, and I went there and I did my talk, and I had to talk straight for 2 hours.
Wow.
Which for me as a gimp was like it was a lot to get through. 2 hours of me straight talking for like not enough money, but whatever, fine, I did it. And so I did it, and right at the end the CEO of this company stands up and goes, wow, Andrew, your presentation was so good, and as you were talking your wheelchair just melted away. And I was taken aback. And I had to go, excuse me? And he goes, well, I don't see your disability.
Oh, my God.
I just see you as a person. And he was the guy, I hadn't been paid yet. So I just smiled and said, thank you. I know what you're trying to say. Thank you. Oh, and I left, and I just was like, oh, no.
God, I'm dying here. So that is the situation that disabled people often find themselves in, is it's someone has said something toxic, but we have to choose in that moment, if it's safe or if it's worthwhile for us to challenge that something toxic. Because as you say, we might need to get paid, or we might need to like go to a place of safety where we're not isolated with an individual who's saying harmful things to us.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, again, I don't think the guy meant any harm
yeah.
at all, which is why I was like, thank you. I know what you're trying to say. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I just left it at that because I was like, there's no point in me starting a whole social justice war with him
yeah.
over what he just said is weird. But I know what he was trying to say.
I love that this is after 2 hours of you giving a talk.
A talk literally about how my disability is so hot and how it's so important.
Wow, amazing. Talk to me now about the because we were kind of briefly touching on this, but the intersection of queerness and disability.
Oh wow, which part of that do you want me to start with? There's so much that we could go down.
Let's just free ball. Let's just go with it.
I like free balls. I think the queer community, for a community that touts itself being so inclusive and accepting and blah, 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 and love is love and all that bullshit that we hear all the time.
Uh-huh.
I think the ableism, particularly the gay male community, has a ton of fucking ableism to get to work through.
Yeah.
And I just wish we could talk about it more.
Yeah.
Like, I think the queer community is amazing, but I also think it's a fucking toxic place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there seems to be quite a lot of punching down within the community. Of, as you say, unfortunately, it is often the cis white gay males who maybe punch down on disabled queers or queers of minority. I lost my words. I forgot what I'm saying. Minority groups. Exactly. There we go. Thank you. Sorry. I had brain fog so intense. I was like, where am I? What am I doing?
What was I doing? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I mean, is this just a simple case of visibility and talking about it is going to improve the situation? Do we need to take drastic action?
I think that in the queer male community, one of the things we could do, we always have fundraisers for HIV and AIDS. Why don't we have the same fundraisers for access?
Ooh, I love that.
Why don't we have go-go boys and drag queens and all the things you have at a gay event for a fucking ramp in the club? Why don't we have a fundraiser for that, where there's go-go boys and drag queens and all the money you spend at the club that night goes into making every single fucking club accessible? Why don't we do that?
That would be amazing. That would literally change like everything. I don't know what it's like in terms of access to queer clubs where you are, but in London, particularly with the buildings being as they are, very few venues, queer venues, are accessible.
Very few here are accessible.
It's great. It's really great, isn't it? Because immediately we're kind of excluded from going and being part of the community. That,
like, I'm a giant fucking seated slut, okay? I want to put my dick in a bunch of different people at the same time, and I want to do that in a club, and I can't do that sometimes. So like, I do feel very excluded from accessing that slutty part of myself. So like, I work with sex workers and they're amazing, and it's such an important job, and I'm so thankful for that. But at the yeah. same time, I want to go to a club and I want to fuck some random that I'll never see again and be like, that was cool, thanks.
As is your right, Andrew. As is your right. Like, I feel like
the irony is that I want to do that, but I also want to be like, can we be best friends and hang out forever after? Like, what?
Exactly. Yeah. No, I totally get that. But we should be able to have all of these really important experiences that everyone else in the queer community gets, but disabled people are so often excluded from. So I think, yeah, campaigning for a wheelchair ramp so that there's accessibility to venues and disabled toilets, things like that, it's so important.
Yeah, it's so valuable. And like, the fact that queer people don't is a reminder that the queer spaces are for a very particular set of queers, white, cis, able-bodied, muscular, masculine, all the bullshit. They're allowed to go in, but anybody else, nope.
Yeah. I feel like we're starting to see a bit more diversity within the community and what's kind of like celebrated, which is fantastic, but it's still got such a long way to go.
Yeah. Like, you know, such a long way. I mean, look at Florida right now. There's still grappling with the Don't Say Gay bill. Like, how are we gonna move the needle forward if we're still only there?
I can't quite get my head around what's going on with that at the moment, because I'm looking around and the world is on fire and people have decided to focus on Don't Say Gay. And like, why?
Like, what are we even doing?
What's happening, Florida? Are you okay?
Yeah, can we get you some meds? Do you need some juice? Like, what is going on?
I know. So a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you saw, but I got crowned Disabled Crow and Hair Artist of the Year.
I did see that. And you sent me all the stuff and I was like, yeah, that's so awesome.
But like, I had to talk to you about it because it's the most incredible event I've ever been to, because it's like in this iconic queer venue, and the organizers
was it in gay?
No, it wasn't in gay. It was in the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, where you've had incredible people like Lily Savage used to, like, there's so many cool people that have performed there, but I can't remember any of them right now, so I'm just throwing out like Paul O'Grady. Have Paul O'Grady. where was I? Oh yeah. So for the night, the organizer got like a wheelchair ramp and hired an accessible toilet, and there were menus that were in Braille, and there were BSL interpreters.
That's fucking incredible. Why can't we do that every day?
Exactly. That's it. Because like, we've seen that it can work. We've seen that you get,
and we've seen you can do it. So you can do. Can you do it on a regular scale?
Exactly. Like,
yes, you can.
Like, I think it's just like, you have to prove to people that yes, it can work. Yes, it can happen. It will make you money, because the disabled community will come out if we can come out.
The disabled people in the UK, I read a thing a couple years ago, and I was doing some work for somebody, and I read a thing a couple years ago that says disabled people in the UK, where you are right now, George, they're worth like £1.8 billion.
Oh my God, give us access to venues. We just want to get drunk and stuff.
Like, they have all the money to, they're patrons. They're worth 1.8 like billion pounds, which means that if you just make stuff accessible, they will patronize your establishments with their money. Why don't you do that then?
They don't want our money. They don't want it. Oh my God.
I know.
I do think part of it is the aesthetics of it, though. Like, as you were saying, you have to kind of look a certain way to be acceptable. And I think in London particularly, or I mean, I'm sure it's the same pretty much wherever you go, but like, being certain kinds of attractive is more likely to entice venues. Do you know what I mean? They want a particular type of clientele.
Yeah, they want muscular, able-bodied, like this.
Yeah.
They want the archetype of what gay is, and that's got to change. And so that's part of why I've done porn, part of why I've done like adult stuff, because I'm like, I want to show you that I can suck dick just as good as the guy over there. Watch me do it. Here's a video of me doing it.
Like, I'm so proud of you. You're doing your bit for activism. You truly are.
I'm really doing God's work.
I joke, but like, genuinely, it's so important. And finding your podcast and meeting you has literally changed my life, because anytime I have that, you know, the horrible voice in my head of like, oh my God, you're disabled, you shouldn't be talking about sex, or you shouldn't feel sexy because the rest of the world tells you not, I put on a Disability After Dark, or I go and like, you know, like chat to you and I'm like, hey, Andrew, I feel shit. And you're just so relentlessly, no, we have to take up space. We can be sexy. We disabled people are hot. What? That's like your catchline.
I had diarrhea yesterday.
Whoop whoop.
I had to wear a diaper yesterday.
Yeah.
Probably will have to wear a diaper tomorrow or later today. Who knows? But like, you know, I understand how hard it is to be sexy when your body is like, fuck you. Yeah. Right. Like, what are you thinking? What do you think? No way, this is not going to happen for you. So I get it. I fully understand and can appreciate how hard that is. And I think that we need to go to those places where it's hard and talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the more we talk about it, the more we're removing stigma and making people happier.
Yeah, and I think because the trouble with the disability narrative online, I'll go back to this one more time. The trouble with the disability narrative online is that it's so cookie cutter. You have to either hate disabled people, or no, sorry, you have to either hate able-bodied people, or you have to rise above and be a superstar disabled person.
Yes, yes. I hate that is the most challenging narrative to me.
What if you're not any of those? And what if you're just a disabled person that's having a fucking hard time? Where is that person?
Yeah.
And that's me. That's what I share online is that stuff. Because I'm like, I never said that being disabled will be fun all the time. Let's talk about that. And I think the more we see that in popular culture, the more maybe this narrative of overcoming bullshit will fade away.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to challenge that, because the capitalistic productive mentality of you have to be smashing it, even if you're disabled, otherwise you're not trying hard enough. You need to use your willpower to overcome it. And unfortunately, you see that with medical professionals as well. I don't know about you, but like a lot of the ones I've encountered are like, well, have you tried like a more positive mindset? And it's ew. Gross. It's so damaging to our disabled bodies. Like, it's just not fair. It's not achievable. And no one else gets held to account like we do. Non-disabled people aren't expected to reach the levels that we're meant to reach while trying super hard just to get out of bed and feed ourselves.
Yeah, like, maybe not shit myself this afternoon. Like, that's my day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they get to be average. I just some days really just want to be average, you know?
I get some days to be below average if I'm lucky.
I mean, yeah, we all know the days and weeks where you
like, can't get anything. I remember a couple weeks ago or a few months ago, I was talking to you and you were like, oh, I'm in the hospital. And I was like, cool, can I FaceTime you? And we like FaceTime for an hour.
Oh my God. You're
Ailee. And it was like, that's the kind of shit that disabled people go through on a daily basis.
That was literally amazing though. Like, I felt so like held and seen, and I looked disgusting, and you were just so friendly, and you didn't make a big deal out of it. It was just like, oh yeah, okay, you're in A&E, let's chat.
Like, because you know what it's like to be in A&E for hours. It's so boring. You need somebody to be like, what are you doing? What's up? How are you? Let's talk about stuff.
Yeah, and like you're bored, you're frustrated, you're a little bit scared because you're in pain or something's going really wrong, and no one knows what's going wrong with you because you have a weird body. So it's just all the stuff. But I don't think, and this isn't me attacking non-disabled people, I don't think I could have had that same kind of conversation with a non-disabled person at that time because they just wouldn't have got it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me anyway, I know what it's like to be really sick. I've almost died multiple times. Thanks, body. But like, I've made it through, and I know how scary it is and how much that internalized ableism voice like is always there. So to have somebody to like riff about that with is so nice.
Yeah, really important. So yeah, thank you.
Anytime.
I'm conscious that we're like running out of time. So I will ask you the classic Cabinet of Curiosities question, which is, if you were a mythical creature, I can't even get my own question right. If you're a mythical creature, what would it be and why?
Oh, man. Yeah. That is the question. You know, I've been watching a lot of Star Trek Picard because I'm a huge nerd. And I just watched the latest one and I fell in fucking love with it again. If anybody listening has not watched Star Trek Picard, get fucking on it. It's such a good, anyway.
I have to pull you up on that because I thought the first season of Picard was fucking unbearable. Like, I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan, but this is where the real divisiveness happens. It's not between abled and non-disabled. It's between Picard fans and not.
Do you like Picard or not? Yeah. No, the second season, I will say it's better. I like it a lot better. Yeah,
much better. I'll agree.
They changed the game, but what I would be, to answer, I went off on a huge tangent. To answer what creature I would be, I would probably be a cyborg.
Oh, yes.
Because I want the collective, I want the friendship, but I also want you to just do stuff for me. Like, so, great.
I'm dying because I'm now like picturing really friendly Borg just like going around giving people hugs.
I'm basically Hugh is who I want to be. I'm Hugh or I'm Seven. I don't know. But like,
Seven is obviously been like one of my most like huge crushes since I was.
I have a crush on her and I like gay men. And I'm like, you are so the coolest person. How do I be your friend?
I know, but she really is.
I also kind of want to be the queen. Have you seen the latest one?
So I've seen episode one.
So, oh, I can't.
Don't give me any spoilers.
Okay, I'll give you one tiny spoiler. It's not a big spoiler, but I'll give you a tiny, tiny. So in the latest episode, Jurati and the Queen and Picard, all the stuff happened. And then, so she goes, Jurati goes, oh, I need to access file shit I stole from the Borg Queen. And I was like, oh, you're my hero. Like, so I need that on a t-shirt. Somebody needs to make that for me because it's so great.
That is amazing.
Like, I think I would be a Borg. Or if we're talking more creature-based, I might be like a centaur.
Wow. Oh my God. That's the second centaur.
Probably because they get to have their shirts off all the time. And I'm a chest guy. So like when yes. I'm with a dude, my favorite area to be with a dude or a male presenting person is like nipples and chest and that whole area. So I like them because they're buff, but also because like, I don't know what it's like to run or jump or like walk around, especially legs. I'd love that power.
So I was gonna ask you, like, when you're this mythical creature, would you still have a disabled body?
I mean, if your head is on the body of a horse, aren't you sort of disabled by yourself?
Like, yeah, I mean, yes, maybe.
I mean, are you? I don't know. But I mean, that's a whole other question. There are moments where I imagine what it would be like if I wasn't disabled all the time. And I think we forget that when people say, oh, sometimes I don't want to be disabled. Like, that's okay. It's okay to feel that. It's okay to have that emotion.
Yeah.
To speak that out. And I think, again, disability social justice warriors don't like it when we say that. But I don't care. I think it's okay. I have days where I fucking want to walk all the time.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important acknowledgement to have, is that... We can champion disability rights, and we can say that disabled people are worthy and have value. And it's not the end of the world if you become disabled, because often disability is held up as like the worst thing that can ever happen to you. And we need to have self-love and acceptance. But equally, there are days when it's very hard to be accepting of the body that you're living in.
Extremely hard. And
I think that's okay.
You know, you mentioned a second ago that it's not the end of the world. I'm going to challenge that. It's the end of the world you thought you knew.
Yeah. No, that is true.
And that grief is okay. And I think grieving that is fine. But you do have to come out the other side and be like, I'm disabled. It's okay.
Yeah. I think also for anyone who's just newly become disabled, the grief is going to be a cycle.
Oh, yeah. You'll have one day where it's fine. The next day you hate everybody. It's okay.
Exactly. Like, even this morning, I woke up and I was like, oh, it's such a lovely sunny day. I want to go like sailing or climbing or kayaking, which are all the things that I used to not only do and enjoy as a hobby, but it was also my job. And so to go from that to physically not being able to do any of those things, I still get moments of grief. And
oh, yeah.
It's okay that happens. Fucking slogs, but
it's a fucking slog for sure.
Yeah. Andrew, is there anything you want to share with us? I know normally, like with my guests who are writers or poets or something, they share kind of a little excerpt of their work. Have you got anything you want to
I don't think if I have anything that I wrote. Let me go over my tweets, because those are fun. I really like
that one where you say fuck all ableds.
Oh yeah, sure. I've said that so much recently.
Let me see
if I can find one that I did that I liked. Oh yeah. So I wrote this on Saturday, and I like it so much. I've tweeted this before, but I love this one a lot. Mm-hmm. I said, content warning: sex, disability, comedy. As a disabled person with cerebral palsy, sometimes I'm prone to choking. As a queer person with cerebral palsy, I can only hope that if I die by choking, we'll be on something big that I enjoy.
I did enjoy that when you posted it. I enjoyed it even more when you just read it. That's like, amazing. And listener, that is a classic example of what you can find on Andrew's social media. Please go and follow him on social media.
Oh, wait, I have one more that I was just thinking about let me see if I can find it.
Do it. This is it for my afternoon. I'm just going to sit here and listen to you read out your
tweet. Oh, I also did this on Saturday right after, because I thought that it was funny. Content warning: religion, disability, death, hell, comedy. If we could teach children about a talking snake, the murder and crucifixion of Jesus, heaven and hell and Satan without batting an eye, why do we have so much trouble teaching them that disabled people exist?
Punchy. Yes.
Bam. And then I just disappeared. And I was like, bye, see you later.
Have you looked at any comments under that?
Somebody on my Instagram was like, what does religion have to do with disability? And I was like, oh, no.
Oh,
like,
no. Religion has got a lot to answer for. So much ableism. Like when I became disabled, I genuinely had people like trying to get me to pray it away, offering to pray it away for me and telling me that it was because I'd sinned that I'd become disabled. But that's beside the point. But yeah, like absolutely. I love that tweet because it's like, if we can teach our children all of these really weird, scary, fucked up things, why can we not teach them that, hey, this type of person exists?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So like, and I just found it so funny when he was like, what does disability have to do with religion? I was like, it was a joke. First of all, like, it was meant to be funny. Calm down. Like,
the internet.
The internet, man. Person, friend.
No, so, okay, so I think.
Baby.
I'm very happy to be called like Yas Queen, Hey Dude, Hey Man, like any of those things, because I don't see that as directly like referring to my gender.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that weird? I'm not sure, but
oh no, it totally works. I'm just making sure that I because I said man and I was like, oh no. Actually, when I was recording the intro for your podcast,
yeah,
for your episode on my show,
which is a great
times episode. I had to like stop and be like, no, it's they them, don't use the other one. And I had to redo it like 7 times because I kept being like,
But thank you so much for the honesty. And I think, you know, not being afraid to make mistakes is so cool.
Yeah, I know. For me, again, they and he pronouns are new. It's a new thing that I'm trying out. So like some days they work and sometimes I'm just like, oh, fuck it. Just call me Andrew.
Yeah, exactly. And oh, God, I know you have to go, but I just want to ask you one more thing.
Sure.
In terms of your gender and queerness and disability, do you feel that you've got more freedom to present however you want and be whoever you are in the queer community as a disabled person when you've got non-binary as your gender? Did that make sense?
My brain just, there was so much in there. Can you do it one more time?
I'm really sorry. I think that's totally my bad. So as a queer disabled person, we were talking earlier about like the restrictions, the limits and the kind of acceptable aesthetics of the queer community. Does adopting the label non-binary give you more of a sense of freedom when navigating those spaces?
Yeah, being non-binary allows me to be as disabled as I fucking need to be and not be held to the standard of disability, the standard of queerness, all these fucking ridiculous constructs that we put in people's way to being their authentic selves. My non-binariness, and I'm fully aware that I still read as a cis man, and that's fine, but my non-binary, this is like a political act of like, fuck you, I'm not going to conform to anything, fuck you.
I love it. That's it's a really good act of rebellion. Do you think if those spaces were more like disabled friendly and there was less focus on having to look and behave a certain way, do you think you would still need, this is all coming out totally wrong, but I'm going to be willing to make a mistake. Do you think you'd still like get as much benefit from having non-binary as your gender?
Maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah. Like, so this is something I think about as well. Like if there wasn't such societal and political implications on having the role of woman, would I?
Yeah.
It feels very similar.
No, I think we should clarify, anybody listening, we are just talking about ourselves.
Oh fuck.
If you identify as non-binary for different reasons, I fucking applaud you and keep going. We are talking about ourselves. We're not putting this on anyone else, just for us.
Oh my god, I've got both of us cancelled. I'm so sorry. So yeah, no. Oh shit.
Well, if this is your last podcast, it was a good one.
I'm non-binary for so many reasons, but one of them is definitely like the standards that women are held to, and you have to be a certain way. And for my personal head, like my own mind, I can't deal with that. I can't deal with failing every single like standard of acceptability that they've set for us. That's one of the reasons. The other reason is that I genuinely just feel non-binary because that's who I am. But I do want to
say,
yeah.
I feel non-binary because it's fucking fun to be like, I'm different than you. Like, and you know, a very quick story about that. I remember when Sam Smith came out as non-binary.
Yeah.
I was so rude to him. Sorry, to them about, see, I just did it. I was so rude to them about their journey. And I went, they're a celebrity. They're just coming out because they have an album coming out. Like, oh yeah, whatever. Yeah. And now that I have taken up that terminology to describe myself, I'm like, oh, fuck Andrew. That was a really shitty thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, but I think
Andrew, it was.
Yeah, it really was, Andrew. Like, fuck. But, you know, I think that that's why for all of us, it's a journey. That's why when somebody calls me handy capable, I don't immediately throw them out of my house. Because it's like, what are you really trying to say here?
Yeah. Oh God, I feel like the last 5 minutes, I'm going to listen back and like, I might have to cut, but if not.
Oh no, keep all of it. It's so good. No. You have to keep all of it. And because I'm going to put this episode on my show too. Just chatting and being ridiculous. Because I want to, because like we said at the way at the beginning, George, you're now a part of the Crippling Co. network.
Yes.
So I want to promote this as much as we can. And why not put my show? Why not put my episode? Why not put my episode of your show on my podcast platform?
Yeah. Oh my God, do it. Oh, that's amazing.
So it's happening. It's happening.
I'm so honored and I'm so happy that I met you. And I feel like I should end this episode now. Andrew, do you have any really good advice for me on how to end podcast episodes?
Just say goodbye.
Okay, goodbye. No.
Just be like, we're done. And then you could ask the guests like, how do people get a hold of you? How do they support you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you that in a sec. So give our listeners your social media handles where they can find you.
Sure thing. They can listen to brand new episodes of my show, Disability After Dark, on the Crippling Co. Network every Saturday. And they can follow me on social media for my hilarious takes about religion and sex and disability at Andrew Gerza _ on Instagram and Twitter. Those are the I have a TikTok, but to be fair, I never use it because I'm old and like, what the, I don't know, too many platforms. So yeah, Instagram and Twitter is where I mostly live. What else do I do? You can follow me if you want to book me for talks. If anybody is a professor and wants me to come and talk, my rates and stuff are on my website, andrewgerza.com.
Fantastic. And you're also on Patreon.
Yes. If you want to support my show, patreon.com/disabilityafterdark. And I, for your lovely pledge of $1 a month up to $5 a month or more, or yearly amount if you wanted to, you will get the show, my show, one day early on a special feed and a weird shout out from me that's like, hey, thanks for being a Patreon.
And if you haven't listened to Disability After Dark then I really recommend that you go.
What are you even doing? Get on it.
What
are you even doing?
Like, you've had the whole pandemic. Literally, what else has been going on?
And I put out pandemic content too. So if you want to hear that, like, there's a whole bunch of episodes on there about the pandemic and what it's done to all of us disabled folks. So yeah.
Amazing. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, George. Are people calling you George or is it AG?
People are calling me, oh my God, yeah, oh no. Okay, the whole name thing is really hard. So like, my pen name is AG Parker because there's a George Parker who also writes. So I was like, I'll be AG Parker, that'll be cool. But then it confuses everyone, so.
Because cool, the whole time I called you George, so.
I know, that is my name, so that is okay. Yeah, George Parker. Oh yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
George, you're super awesome. It was so fun to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.